This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 502 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the Franklin Matters Q&A session, facilitated by the Senior Center on Thursday, March 18th. The session was conducted virtually via Zoom conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. I did use a brief presentation deck to open the session, a couple of recent photos and screen captures of the websites, and the watch list are among the many key items to share and open the discussion. After that, we're there to answer your questions. Among the topics we discussed in the session was going further on the watch list for 2021, including the vaccine availability, school committee budget, town budget cycle. After Davis Thayer, the next steps for the school committee, the developing the long-range master plan for the school district, and then back as part of the town budget cycle, the proposed stormwater fee. The recording runs around 45 minutes, so let's listen in. And again, thank you for joining. Steve Sherlock, I volunteer as the Community Information Director for Franklin Matters, in case you're not aware. And certainly as we get into this, I'll be spending a little bit more time and sharing about how I'm integrating what I do in with the community cable, TV and radio operations. So we talked about the town common, the gazebo picture from yesterday. Before it got really, really cold, the DPW was down along Main Street, cleaning up, started to get rid of some of those leaves, unfortunately, that had gathered there. They hadn't got that message yet, so. But they are busy starting to clean up for when we get, you know, more warm weather and then can walk around. This I had shared as part of a recap of some walking that I had been doing, and it was various construction projects. This was the space for the Keegan, former Keegan Chevrolet. Mm-hmm. The building, if you haven't been by, is gone. It's not there anymore.
Right.
And they've actually, this was a couple of days ago, and I know every time I go by, there's a deeper hole. They're doing foundations. They're doing the stormwater mitigation. That plot is active. But the key point I wanted to share here is in case you just drove by someday and it's like, wait a minute, where'd the building go? Yeah, it's gone. It is gone. Oops. Did I have one? Yeah. And while on one of the other walks, I had gone into, if people remember a few years ago, Cook's Farm had a 55 plus development. And then there were, I think it was also coincidentally about 55 housing or condo type houses. This is in one of the side pieces, side roads off 140. So next to the country club. Mm-hmm. I had never been back in there. It's like, where's this? Oh, yeah. Look at this. So in case you haven't gotten it out and around, take an explore. It's interesting. But that is, my mouse is very sensitive. Ooh. So as I mentioned, I am integrating what I'm doing in with Franklin TV and Franklin Radio. My audio recordings are shared certainly on the Franklin Matters page. You can go there and find the radio recordings or radio shows, as I call them. But there's also a link on Franklin TV to go to Franklin Matters. There's a link directly on Franklin TV to get to the radio and hear the broadcasts. Of course, there are multiple channels. In the future, at some point in time, we'll call it potentially Franklin News, which is the link on the bottom. And effectively, we'll have the three channels. The vision we're talking about is watch, with the three channels of TV, listen to the radio, and read Franklin Matters. And we'll incorporate so that Franklin Matters is not just reporting on the town meetings and what's happening with the schools and the streets and roads, et cetera, but we'll also be sharing some of the other shows that are appearing on the different TV and radio channels, because at this point, unless you look at the program guide, they don't do much social, and that's what I'll be bringing to them so that we can create awareness. It's like, oh, do you know that one of the most popular shows on the TV is actually bowling? I never would have guessed. But there's a bowling show they do periodically, and that's actually one of the most highly viewed shows. So interesting stuff. And then the social media cascade, if you do subscribe to Franklin Matters, and I do recommend that to get the one email a day, I do post to the website. There is an RSS, or really simple syndication, for those who want to get an RSS feed. I do the podcast, as I mentioned. The newsletter comes out once a day, and that's all it does. So everything from the prior day comes in the one newsletter. And then I schedule to utilize Twitter and Facebook. Facebook, of course, because of their algorithm, there's no guarantee if you follow me on Facebook that you're going to get everything. Facebook consistently wants to me to boost the post, which means they get money for that. And sorry, I'm not going to boost it just for you to get money. There are other ways for folks to follow along better, more accurately. So clearly, this is a time for your questions. So the one other prompt I'll make is I did update earlier this year kind of the watch list for 2021. These are kind of the five themes I think that the town's going to have some conversation around going through the year. Clearly, the pandemic and the recovery, as I'm sure you've all been aware of, the vaccines and the availability thereof. We need to hold the course in the meantime. At least there is a schedule that is happening. Town budget, school budget, the budget cycle is officially underway. There's going to be some interesting and challenging discussions based on the finance committee last week and the budget subcommittee meeting yesterday. They're starting to work with a hole of about 2.7 million, maybe 2 million by the time they finish some adjustments. So if you're short 2 million, you're going to have to figure out where that money is going to come from. And unless we can increase revenues, which generally is no appetite for, you're going to cut. And what services are those going to be? So just a forewarning to keep your ears open and participate. There's a lot of ways to do so. Quickly, certainly affordable housing has been an issue, and there is at least a discussion around housing and what kind of housing we need, et cetera, primarily through the Economic Development Subcommittee. So hopefully that'll continue to happen. I see somebody clapping there. That's good. That's good. We all need affordable housing. The Franklin election, certainly the major national election occurred last year, but Franklin elects its town council, school committee, and other elected positions this year in November. So if you know somebody who's running or talk to those who might consider, certainly, then if you don't, certainly be involved and consider, because citizen engagement certainly is one of the key pieces to do. Apologize for the sensitivity on the mouse. It's the first time I've tried the dual screen and the mouse is much more sensitive this way than I thought it would be. One of the pieces as part of the budget discussion is a proposal for a stormwater utility fee. Why are we adding a utility fee? And if you've noticed on your quarterly water, sewer, trash statement, there's a new line in there that says stormwater, and there's $0 on it. But it was a placeholder that at some point in time, there may be a fee, and they're at least positioned if there is a fee for it. Why would they do that? Over many years, the town has been, through a variety of EPA compliance measures, done a variety of mitigations for stormwater. You can have seen rain gardens. Certainly a lot of, even when the senior center redid, there's some rain gardens and catch basins to manage the stormwater. At a lot of the schools, every time they've had to redo that, at a lot of the places where they're redoing a road, you know, from the ground up, water line, sewer line, then they'll repave. Where they have opportunities, they'll shrink the road, they'll do catch basins and or rain gardens along the roads, all to help alleviate and thereby become compliant with the runoff, because we're groundwater, but all of our stormwater runs off ultimately through Mine Brook into the Charles. And the Charles, you know, back many, many years ago, was certainly uninhabitable for a lot of the wildlife. It's improved tremendously, but it's still not clean water. So they're still making efforts to do that. All those efforts require some funding, and Franklin, to its credit, has made a lot of progress by getting grants for this and for that. But the stormwater pieces of the budget are getting sufficiently amount, a large enough amount that they're proposing to create the stormwater utility fee. So that would do two things. One, it would take it out of the operational budget. So we would get some relief there from a regular taxpayer perspective. Those funds could be used for other things. But then the utility fee would be paid by all of the stormwater users, which effectively becomes everybody in the town. So all of the properties based on an impervious coverage. So if you've got clearly the house on your lot and you've got a driveway and a sidewalk, then the ground, the wa rainwater can't go through. So that's impervious. All your grass area, your woodland area, that's pervious coverage. So the town's gone through and on the GIS maps, there's now on the Stormwater Division page a link so that you can find your property and look at your house and find what impervious coverage you have. And if they did propose a fee, then at least proportionally you would pay a little bit. So clearly, you know, depending upon what size house you have, it may be one utility or two utility fees, as opposed to somebody like at Big Y or Franklin Village Plaza, where you've got this humongous parking area. Clearly, they're going to pay a lot more because they've got more space, more rainwater they would catch, they would need to treat. And there's a whole scheme of some credits and rebates, et cetera, et cetera. So I certainly encourage people to check out their property. There may be some errors in the calculation, so let's find those out now and at least start raising the questions through town council, through DPW, as this conversation continues. Because when it gets into the budget period itself, when the budget hearings are at the FinCom in April, and then the budget hearings are at the town council in May, this discussion is going to be much more important because it'll affect the entire budget going forward. If we don't have a utility fee, then the stormwater increases are now going to compete with all the other expenses that, as I mentioned earlier, we're short. How are we going to pay? Something's going to have to give. So I'll
You have
stop
a question. I
this
have a
part of the
question.
presentation piece and get into your questions because this is what we have the time to do.
I have a
Certainly.
question.
Absolutely.
With the stormwater, do they have a record of people who have ordered the rain barrels and then put in for the rebate? And does that is that going to affect the overall charge? Is there any
Yeah,
discount?
that's one of the credit items. And I don't know how far back. I believe the record certainly, because I bought a rain barrel years ago as well. So at some point in time, those should get reconciled to get on there. That'll be one of the things that, assuming it goes forward, we'll have to make sure that they've got that coverage. So, you know, how far back do we know that if you bought the rain barrel by this time, then you should get the automatic credit? If not, raise your hand and say, hey, I've got a rain barrel, I'm using it. Where's my credit? Things of that sort. Yeah,
What's
good point.
the advantage of using a rain barrel?
Well, a rain barrel would, at least as the downspout where you've positioned it, you can catch the rain and then water the garden or your flowers as opposed to continuing to let it go out. One of my downspouts goes into the driveway. So that would be at a prime spot. I would put the rain barrel so it just doesn't go down the driveway and out into the road.
All right, I've got all my downspouts already watering the beds
And in which case, yeah, I don't know that they've discussed that yet as part of a credit, but if you get your downspouts going into the ground, that's good.
What about if you have, like, I have two sump pumps, and the sump pumps are dug and dispersed out into areas with like gravel pits and all of that? Do they take that into consideration or?
That's part of the mitigations that the larger companies, larger areas can certainly do. I think if you recall, actually, with the Keegan construction or the construction going on in the former Keegan space, one of the things they're building and where the parking lots will be is this kind of stormwater mitigation. So the Big Y had something similar. So I think their estimate was that they can get an inch of rain in an hour. They effectively capture it and then let it seep into the ground, as opposed to going into the stormwater drain and just running immediately down the road. So they're building, you can see, you know, kind of the blue, it looked like dog pits or, you know, enclosures. They were all blue. That's effectively going to be the kind of tunnel arrangement they're going to have to create these tubes to catch the water, maintain it on site before dispersing it. Similar to what you already have implemented. But that would be a good question to ask as to whether that would also be eligible for a mitigation. That particular unique instance hasn't come up yet, but there's no reason why it couldn't.
How is the town budget this year, I mean, not the town, the school budget, compared to the year prior to COVID? Has it gone up significantly? Has it had an impact on it?
That's one of the interesting pieces, because clearly due to COVID, they've had some separate costs based on COVID that have also been reimbursed specifically because of COVID with some of the Recovery Acts, et cetera, CARES Act, et cetera. The budget, at least the initial school, phrasing it carefully, the superintendent's recommended budget was previewed at the school committee meeting last week. And it's approximately $3 million more than the prior year budget. They did incorporate some, if you will, post-pandemic type to add additional counseling, anticipating that additional social emotional learning, mental health of the students, they've already needed counselors. It's been on their wish list for a while. They're anticipating they're just going to need them that much more coming out of the pandemic. I would agree from my, you know, non-clinical position based on what I'm hearing, that would probably be a good thing to do. Assuming it makes it through the budget, that's one thing. There are some other COVID-related costs in terms of more PPE, et cetera, that are kind of off budget. They're still anticipating some of the federal act to cover those. It's more at this point. That was one of the pieces in the budget subcommittee meeting yesterday. You know, the town's approximately got $3 million new revenue this year to distribute amongst town and schools. So schools saying, I want three, and that's all the town has. Yeah. It's not likely it's all going to go to the schools. So there's going to be some discussions.
Do they have line items for tutoring too, for the kids that are now behind?
I did not yet see, and again, respectfully, the budget book is, you know, yay big. Yeah. I saw the presentation doc and some of the summary pieces. I haven't gone into the line item detail because, again, they also break it out by school, by line item. I haven't had the time to go into that level of detail yet. They do have, and I believe there was consideration, at least through kind of the lifelong learning, to provide either free or at a nominal charge, additional remediation classes for the summertime in advance of coming back in September.
Good. I think they're going to need those if they have to take MCAS from a year ago, all the kids that, you know, took biology in sophomore year, and now they're juniors and they're finishing chemistry and they have to take both. It's going to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. And my wife had retired after 20 something years. So we still have loops out through the school community, and the teachers clearly go through in September when the students come in, kind of an assessment. Where are you? Where should you be? But that's generally from a June to September time period, you know, one grade to the next. To the extent that the pandemic has been for as long as it is, where are the people? It conceptually could be more in some cases and less in others. It's the teacher's going to have a real challenge to try and figure out where they are and then develop that kind of personalized instruction. So you may be at a point where you need so much and somebody else may be at a point further along or further back. It's going to vary across the classroom. So it's going to be a challenge.
Since we're with budgets, what was the net result of the $500,000 FUPA? I know we got some money back. Bottom line, how much?
Yeah, from a budget perspective, there's no budget impact because the money that was lost is within that water fund, which is funded by all the water fees, or sewer fund in this case. So it's in the water sewer fund. They already have within, and it's a separate enterprise fund, they call it. They already have $1 million as a low water mark to maintain for an emergency basis. So effectively the 500,000 came out of that emergency piece. And then the 500 will get rebuilt back as part of the normal fee structure. And yeah, they did get, I think it was what, 380, 360 or something like that from a couple of sources.
Okay. That's what I hadn't heard, what the latest. All right. So I did pretty good recoup. Okay. That's not bad.
Yeah.
It was around 200,000 the last time I saw anything published. So,
right. Well, I think it may be that there's still 200,000 that we haven't recovered. They're still trying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got, if roughly three of the five that went Dixie. Maybe the investigation will turn it up. Maybe it won't, but they're still looking.
Okay.
Now, what do, with Davis Thayer closing, is that going to be, you know, in September, or, you know, would actually, would the funds, you know, for the school be alleviated because after just one school being closed, or is it just going to be like a roller coaster?
No, at this point, the school committee has decided to close Thayer effective September.
Okay.
So that there is an active planning between the Davis Thayer administration and Keller to ensure a smooth transition. So that's underway. From a budget perspective, those accommodations are already being built into the budget. Clearly, some number of the teachers are going to follow the students. There's some positions that effectively would be duplicated because you've already got a principal. You don't have a, you don't need two principals, et cetera. And if you recall, Davis Thayer already had an interim principal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he or she was here knowing there was an interim until the decision was made. Mm-hmm. So those pieces of savings, and I think roughly about $1 million because of closing the school. Some of it around the town side, because the town really manages the facility itself, heat, okay, water, janitor services, et cetera. But from a school operations perspective, most of those costs are just going to follow the students, okay, into Keller. There will still be some efficiencies and savings because now you're dealing with an existing building with a better population,
right?
You know, in terms of full, more fullness there. Mm-hmm. Somebody's coming back.
Yeah, it was the gentleman that was clapping under a different name, so we'll admit him and see.
Okay. So I was in the middle of Davis Thayer, and so did I answer all the pieces that?
Yeah. Thank you.
I think the one other piece that hasn't yet been addressed that I know the school committee will assign another team to look at will be the longer term facility plan. Because you may recall that when I think it was Castle Blues did their facility study, clearly they were focused on Thayer, but they said, oh, by the way, it looks like based upon the populations, if you do this, you could close two other schools. That still needs to get worked out. And that would be part of this master plan group. Because while they would close the two schools potentially, there would have to be some accommodations made to at least one of the existing elementary schools to accommodate the additional crowd. The one thought would be, while we have today the high school, three middle schools, and six elementaries kind of feeding up, we could operate one high school, one middle school, three elementaries. That certainly would be a lot more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Would we get there? How would we get there? TBD.
Yeah.
On a different note, do you know where to go to find information about building and what, like, see the plans for new construction that's happening?
Yes. Yeah, let me go back to the screen sharing, but effectively it's off the town webpage and the planning board page. And let me stop. Oh, I did start sharing. Let me stop sharing and navigate to the better page. I'll get out of the presentation first. Because I do have, all right, now I'll come back to start sharing. All right, so on the town website, if you go to boards and committees, and then to the planning board, the planning board has a list of projects.
Okay.
And these are the projects at top that are approved. And these are the ones that are still in their planning proposal cycle.
Okay.
So
now, what if it's not listed on there? Because this is where I went and I found this, except the project that I'm interested in is not on this list.
And which one, where is it? Because the issue I found is this is for projects that we wouldn't necessarily refer to them in the same name. So that's one issue. But this is also projects that were kind of more recently through the planning board. So if it was approved maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but still hasn't been completed, you may not find the info here.
Okay. Yeah, it's for 25 Plain Street. And I guess there's a whole hubbub about it. The town took the land. I guess there was back taxes owed on it. And they took the land and then they built a group home on it. And then out of the woodwork came family members associated with this who weren't notified about the back taxes. So the town gave them a piece of the land back, I guess. The group home's already there.
Okay.
And then they were approved it for a single family house, but there's another lot on it and they were going to put in a private driveway and now there's a road going back there. So just, interesting. Yeah,
and I wonder too, because of the nature of that, it may also be something that's in the Zoning Board of Appeals as opposed to the planning board.
Okay.
And that's one of the pieces where I haven't really closely followed all of those. Yeah, and they don't make it that easy to find other than looking at the agendas to find, like what's the overall pieces there that are open or not.
Okay. And of course, everything's closed, so you can't go down there and ask.
No, the town hall is open.
Oh, it is? I was there the other day and it was not open. Is it? I think it's limited hours. I was probably there.
Yeah, I think it closes the, actually we'll go here because the town made the announcement a bit ago as to their hours. So it should be.
Yeah, something came out, I thought last week, if I recall.
Town offices closed. I thought there was an update on the hours. I do know that they're closed on, they used to open till 1 on Fridays and they're closed till noon. They're open till noon, I think.
Okay. Current lobby hours. It's under quick links.
Current lobby hours. I knew it was there somewhere.
There it is.
Yeah, 8 to 2 Monday through Thursday and 8 to 1 on Fridays.
Okay.
Yeah, so it used to be up till 5 and now it's up till 2.
Okay.
The other piece while we're talking about opening, the library gets to open on Monday.
Yes.
They do for browsing, but I heard that the bathrooms are closed. You're only allowed to go in and browse.
Right.
So, and there's probably limited time that you're allowed to be in there.
More capacity than time, but they may gate it by time too. Yeah.
How are all the town wells doing? Are they all now operational or we still have constraints?
The major constraints are actually being alleviated with the construction at Grove Street. I think if you've seen that by the Grove Street parking lot for the SNET trail. And I think there's a link that shows some photos, if I recall. Nope, they changed it. They updated to put the construction projects. But the parking lot for the Grove Street parking lot for the SNET trail, at the end of that parking lot is a new pump station, pump and treatment plant. There are two pumps right along Grove. I think pumps 3 and 6, if I recall correctly, had one's offline fully, the other one's at less capacity because of manganese and iron in predominantly in the water. There was a photo a few years ago that they had shown. It had a hydrant with a blast of water coming out. The water was like, it didn't look like water. It was kind of a reddish orange coming out.
Yeah.
Of it.
Yeah.
So that construction is on target to be completed this summer. And as it completes, those two wells should come back online, which gives us, I believe, another 700,000 gallons pumping capacity. We've always had sufficient water, drought notwithstanding. We've got enough groundwater. We just have been limited by the state in terms of the pump capability,
exactly.
Which is why we still have restrictions.
That's the question, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll still have, and more than likely forever have, restrictions on what we can pump in order to continue to conserve water. But we should not have an issue from a supply perspective, assuming we don't get into droughts, because we're all aquifer based.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I was interested to see the MEMA, Mass Emergency Management Association, had posted, I think it was Tuesday, because I shared it yesterday, I think. There's the drought one level status in Western Mass. And that's coming out of winter. They're already at level one. You know, based on what we've heard locally, you know, we're okay. We've had enough rainwater. And certainly with the ground coverage and the snow melt gradually, that should have refilled the aquifers. But, you know, who knows what the weather's really going to be as we get into the summer. And last year we went to a drought level 3. If we'd gone to 4, we would have been on a rationing basis.
Yeah. So,
don't want to get into that. But.
Right.
Nope.
Do you know the Board of Health, how they're going about making the decisions about openings and what can open? Are they getting guidance from, you know, the people in Boston? Or it seems like everybody's sort of doing a different thing town by town.
Yeah, and I interviewed Kathleen Liberty, our health director, yesterday. So that radio will come out, you know, in the next couple of days. But yeah, the CDC, certainly from a national perspective, releases their guidance. Then the Mass Department of Public Health releases their guidance. And then Franklin is the local implementation of that guidance. So yeah, Kathy and her department have been busy coordinating, you know, the few vaccine clinics that we've been able to do because of supply have been successful. I think people have heard, you know, for the first responders, they had it at the high school. They did one for the housing authority last week. That was successful. So yeah, they're planned and ready to do that. And then they're in heavy conversations around the protocols and the markings and, you know, as people start reopening both businesses as well as, you know, certainly the government buildings as well. Yeah, a lot of hopeful signs.
Yeah. The senior center ended up with some of the overflow of the vaccines from the housing authority, so there was zero waste, which was good. We had, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, that wait list is always key.
Yeah, well, we had a wait list, but we specifically had homebound people and those over 90 that couldn't, you know, people that couldn't get to Gillette easily.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue. And I had an interview with Senator Rausch last week that I shared. one of her interests is public health. And when she came here, she was surprised with the gaps that we have as a state in public health. The one key piece being some of the infrastructure, you know, service-wise or system-wise. But we do have a plan, and I think it was even given some press coverage, you know, the Department of Public Health plan got tossed aside by Governor Baker when he went and used the outside companies to set up the vaccine clinics. I can appreciate where he came from, because by doing the volume, he certainly gets the volume. But to your point, by not using the local distributions, those people that are at risk, that are homebound, no transportation, we're in the best position, respectfully, to do that. And we've been cut out of that process. So
agreed.
It's still an issue. It's still on her radar. So there may still be some legislative help. It won't help us this time, but it should help us better prepare for next time.
And hopefully they have something in place too, because by saying that you need to use an online service, a lot of the seniors and elders aren't real comfortable with the technology and weren't right. able to fill things out in the 15 minutes required. And that's just not fair.
Well, that's where the adjunct of like the 2-1-1 answer service, that needs to be part of, it gets in really to kind of the overall accessibility of any service, which I know Senior Center is very much aware because of the nature of our population. But from a town perspective, any delivery of service, and I think the town, from what I've seen, has done fairly well. I mean, we've got an active disability committee. We've got the school, schools doing their part, Senior Center doing their part. But unfortunately, you know, some of the political decisions didn't consider all of those factors as we're hearing. You know, there's issues there in terms of, you know, catching those that are not so, you know, facilitated with, you know, access via technology.
Mm-hmm. How does the new wait list work exactly? I was able to get my wife and I on it as soon as it opened up last week, but doesn't really explain the timing and other details.
Yeah, so based on some of the press conferences that I've observed from Governor Baker, who's been asked that question, and respectfully, he didn't give the great detail answer, but knowing systems, I can kind of fill in the gap. So there's some speculation, but knowing systems, I feel comfortable with it. So for at least as of what, last weekend, I saw a number like 400, 500,000 people had already signed up in the first couple of days of the registration. So you're going to get put in buckets. To a certain extent, you'll have a timestamp as to when you put in, but your key data in terms of your age group and any of the health factors, as the prioritization hits those, they'll take that bucket or filter of people and then randomly start assigning, or at least giving out, okay, we got 100 here, we'll send out 100 invites. And those invites are going to be yours until you fill up. You know, assuming, you know, I think there'll be some timing. So they'll send you an email or whatever, and within 24 hours, you've got your slot. If you don't take it within the 24 hours, you just fall back into the pool and get another notification. That timeline or process kind of works. Exactly when the timeline is going to work is going to truly be dependent upon the delivery of the vaccine. So the other good piece from yesterday's press conference, we got more this week. And we also got more J&J vaccine, which is a one shot as opposed to the other two shot.
Right.
So that's going to have, if that increase continues to come, which, you know, as we go further into March and April, that's supposed to happen, then it shouldn't be that long before, you know, respectfully, people in our category start getting those confirmations, you know. So if not next week, the week after, you should start getting confirmation saying,
okay,
go register.
Okay. Good.
The big issue, and I know I've talked about it with Jamie, Helen, and others, you get a million people in the 65 plus category, and the state's only getting 100,000 a week.
Right.
That's 10 weeks worth. Right. So it's going to take time to work through it. And now I haven't seen what the stats were, but even at the time they opened up to 65 plus, initially they'd still only had like 30% penetration on the 75 plus.
Exactly.
Which is really? Fortunately, I think I've heard they're over 50% now. They're closer to 60% on the 75 plus, but that's still a lot of people. And it's probably some folks that are, you know, homebound, lack transportation lacking. They're in these gaps that we're going to, at some point, we're going to get to them. The question is how.
Right.
And we're still only at 17% for the state of Massachusetts.
Overall. Yeah. Yes.
Overall. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And Bob, I did hear that a couple of people have had luck just by chance going on the Vaccine Finder website periodically, just checking. And I've had a couple of people say they were able to get appointments. So it's worth still continuing to do that in hopes that you might get in sooner.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah, I gave up. I would get on at 8:30 in the morning and it was already
Yeah, there's two different sites. You can use the government one, and then there's Vaccine Finder. I can send you the link.
I've been going on vaxfinder.mass.gov or whatever.
Yeah, this one was different. Let me see if I can
because I think I had all three of them at one point listed. Because there were multiple, and the other piece that we're finding out, at least based on what has been happening, CVS scheduling has been happening. They tend to release, you know, kind of in batches. So that's one of the things where we just have to be careful so that the, scroll through here, Senator Rausch.
This was vaccinefinder.org.
Okay.
And then there's, of course, the maimmunizations.org.
Yeah, I'm not finding it quickly. I know I had them out there. But there are at least multiple, and then you can go to CVS directly and try that way. Mm-hmm. Although from what I understand, at least from a CVS perspective, the Franklin area ones are not on the list.
Okay. Yeah, I was checking the one and I forget if it was Medway or Milford.
Mm-hmm. Also, and pharmacies. I haven't seen
anything at any of the Walgreens yet.
Milford Hospital is doing it also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the other piece that Milford Hospital, Brigham Williams, these Beth Israel, all these hospitals are starting to get some supplies. So they're starting to, you know, get out to their circle. And if you happen to be a patient or know somebody with a patient, you can get in through that way. But yeah.
Just seeing if I can get in anywhere.
I just found the scheduling alternatives.
Yeah, it still amazes me how uncoordinated the whole thing is. And it's surprising. Most of the systems in Massachusetts, comparatively speaking, work fairly well, but this one didn't happen.
Well, it was interesting. I phrased that question out and I haven't gotten any response. I would say that none of the state systems work as they should. And you can think about problems with the DMV, RMV. You can think about problems with unemployment. Certainly vaccine is the current one. The mass health enrollment. So I asked folks, what state system rolled out statewide actually works? I haven't heard yet.
Yeah, well, I'm originally from Chicago, so I compare, you know, Massachusetts to Illinois, and Illinois has been goofed up for 80 years. So
right. Yeah, because even the Globe had an article recently, and they only went back to the unemployment problems, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic. They've had issues back in 2008 when the Great Recession started. We couldn't get anywhere on the unemployment system at that point.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a historic issue that truly needs to get addressed. Question is how. All right, so I did find, so mascovidvaccines.com, and then vaccinatema.com. Are the other two non-state ones.
Okay. Jotting it down. Thank you.
Yeah. I can put the link in the chat if you want to grab it that way. I'll stop share, find the chat. Yeah, that's one of the good things that, and at least having interviewed Rep. Roy, who his new chair role is of the Joint Committee on Telecommunications, Internet, Utilities, and Energy. There's a sweet spot there. We're going to be able to have some good access to him. And then Becca Rausch, at least from her perspective with, you know, women's health, voting rights, and public health, those are all prime topics. We'll have an in there. And then our other senator, certainly Karen Spilka, she's the Senate president. So I feel good that we've got at least the right ears to talk to say, if there's a way, can you help us?
Yes.
And yeah. Because there are some trying issues for sure.
There.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.